This Rich Eisen Show podcast is sponsored by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and maybe even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Here we go now.
So far, so good.
With guest host Jim Jackson.
I like it.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Get the duck boats ready. The Boston Celtics, they are the best team in the NBA.
I've been telling you since October, best team in the NBA.
Today's guests, ESPN senior NBA writer Mark Spears, Basketball Hall of Famer Grant Hill, contributing writer for The Atlantic, Jemele Hill. And now, sitting in for Rich, Jim Jackson.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to a Finals Friday. It is, let me see. Fellas, it's about that time. It's about that time.
Let's go.
Will the Celtics finish it? Will they get out of Dallas? Could they celebrate in my former hometown? American Airlines Center, Chris Brockman, Jason Feller, TJ, what's up?
You know.
Yeah, what's you up, know. My man?
It's good to be back, man. Thank you for
great to see you, man. It's so great to see you.
Thank you for not allowing me to scare you away the last time I was here the last 2 days. And no more Tony Braxton questions for you over there.
I mean, look, we need to put that to bed, literally.
We did, but we got a great guest. We got a great guest later on in Grand Hill. We can ask him his story.
Does he have a Tony Braxton story?
No, he's Tamia.
He's got a Tamia story.
He got a Tamia story.
You know? And she was high up on the list, too.
I was like, whoa.
You know,
high up on the list. So I'll let you kind of segue into that when we get to
his
that.
His wife, Jim Jackson.
No, I'm just saying maybe how they met, how they got together. Okay. You know, can he sing? Does he sing with? Does he help coordinate some songs? You know, stuff like that. No,
I feel like I'm the total accent. I don't know. I need a relationship type title on this show now, I guess, if I'm going to be going down these wormholes.
You worked your way. But no, it's a special day just because I'm kind of selfish in the sense that I want to see more basketball.
Right.
You know, the dominance of what Boston has been able to do has been put on display. And again, it goes back to what they've been able to do all year. They've been dominant all year. Did anybody see this coming in regards to the finals as far as 4-0 sweep? I don't think so, but
Brockman will tell you he did. But
no,
I mean, I said five. I thought we'd win in five.
I said six.
But you had the Celtics or the Mavs?
No, I had the Celtics in six.
Okay, you're one of the few smart people in the media then, Jim.
No, I had six. Just I thought that Dallas would be able. I thought Game 3 was very critical. And they had a chance to win that, and they would get, you know, two at home.
Yep.
You know, I didn't think they would be able to win on the road, but at home, I thought maybe they would be able to take care of it. It's not over.
Right.
No.
No, definitely not.
But we're creeping towards that being over, you know. And it's interesting, too, because it's been a lot of talk in the last couple of days coming off of Game 3 about Luka and his performance or lack thereof on the defensive end of the court, which has been something that has plagued him and the Mavericks, you know, since he's gotten into the league. And, you know, he had a press conference. He kind of addressed that issue, kind of issued an apology not only to his teammates, to the organization, fans, and stuff like that. I think we have that press conference, too, that we can roll a little bit and kind of talk about this and dig into a little bit more of Luka's mindset as we enter into Game 4.
Definitely a lot of holes, I think, still. 25, got a lot of ways to learn, a lot of things to learn. This is my first semifinals, so I'm going to learn from it for sure. But we're not in off season yet. You know, they still got to win one more game. Like I said, we're going to believe till the end.
Any takes out of that that you kind of read, not just the words, body language, eye contact, anything out of that before I get into my thought process? Any?
Seems a little defeated.
Uh-huh. A little bit.
The tone in his voice, shoulders slumping.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a great player. He's a superstar in this league. Mm-hmm. He's a first-team All-NBA-er. He's going to win multiple MVPs, I believe that, before his career's over. No reason why they can't win tonight. Keep this thing going.
T?
I feel like, you know, I said this yesterday. Someone brought up that, you know, maybe this is too big of a moment. Maybe there's too much pressure. Like, if you know anything about Luka, he wins MVP of the EuroLeague at 18. Mm-hmm. Those crowds over there are insane. Like I said yesterday, they start fires in the crowd. They have chants. It's something I don't think that he's overwhelmed by our crowds. Mm-hmm. So I don't think in that sense it's too big of a moment for him. I will cape for him in this sense, though. For 12 games, he was unbelievable in these playoffs. But now you come out, we're here, he's getting shots in his abdomen. He's wrapped up. He's got more Band-Aids on him than the St. Lunatic at a Nelly concert.
Right.
Lunatic than a Nelly concert back in the day. You know he's wrapped up like the mummy. He's hurting. Maybe I kind of put this on like the man just kind of ran out of gas and his body's just like not responding the way he'd want it to, and that's kind of why his play has been not as great.
Yeah, I don't like that narrative. I like the narrative that the Celtics defense has been hounding him. They've been making him work extremely hard on defense because they know he's such a liability, and they're making him do everything on offense because his supporting cast is less than compared to Boston's. And that's why it's 3-0. That's why we're on the precipice of a sweep and a completion of this dominant postseason run from the Seas.
Well, I told you I'd cape for him a little
bit. Yeah, well, let's break it down in a couple different areas here. Let's go back to Luka. Luka talked about him being only 25 years old, and he has a lot to learn. Now, keep in mind, when Luka came into the league, we praised and talked about his maturity level at a young age because he did play in the EuroLeague. He'd been playing against professionals since he was 13, 14, 15 years old.
In front of a very hostile crowd.
So he did come with a level of maturity, but I still believe there's some more basketball maturity that he has to obtain.
For sure.
And a lot of that is in his body demeanor, how he approaches his game with regards to getting in shape, tip-top shape. But also it goes back to the expectations of what he sees from officials during the game and not getting calls and how he reacts to it. That's a level of maturity that he has yet to get to because he's so good, so dominant as a player, he's going to be able to get what he wants. And let's go back to game three. He picks up foul number 5 on Jaylen Brown on the baseline where he hooks him and, you know, he picks that foul up. And then you come back less than 20 seconds later and picks up the 6th foul, ends up fouling out. He's upset. He's yelling at the officials, yelling at the bench. But that's a you issue because this is something that's been going on with Luka for a long time. Now, are we saying that he has to be the best, the greatest defensive player? No. But the effort has to be there. And the effort comes in a number of different ways. I played with Steve Nash. Steve Nash would get targeted a lot, okay, against opposing defenses. When Joe Johnson was there, Joe would generally guard the point guard and kind of shuffle Steve off to the side and then provide help. Okay. But one thing Steve Nash did was he gave the effort consistently. The difference I see with Luka is a couple things. One, the Boston Celtics make it a point to target Luka wherever you're at, wherever he's at on the court. I don't care who he's guarding. They're going to bring him into a pick-and-roll scenario, get the switch, and then attack him. Now, that is an enormous amount of pressure on a player to have to guard almost every play, but then also single-handedly run the offense and be the scoring threat and help win the game. So you know what that means? You got to be in tip-top shape.
Yeah. Yep.
If you're not in tip-top shape, one of those ends of the court are going to be given up. And unfortunately for the Mavericks and for Luka, is on the defensive end. Now, why is that important? Because if you're playing against a team like the Boston Celtics, who can put five threats on the floor when you play Porzingis in regards to with regards to putting the ball on the deck and attacking. Unlike Minnesota, where it was Mike Conley at times, definitely, you know, Anthony Edwards was able to beat you off the dribble. But once the ball got out of their hands, Nickeil Alexander-Walker, McDaniels, they weren't threats to come back at you and drive. The Celtics, come here, Luka, put you in pick and roll. We blow by you. You help. We kick it. You close out. Celtics drive the close out. Another help scenario. Boom, swing it to the corner. Open shot. Okay, let's say they don't hit it. Guess what? They got an opportunity for an offensive rebound because the Mavericks haven't been able to match up fully because they've been in rotation. That's the result of getting blown by on that initial thrust up top by Luka. And he has to internalize that and see that on film and say, I got to do better. Now, he's been saying that. And the question that's come back, fellas, is like, who, if anybody in the organization, can really get to Luka and say, this has to be a point of emphasis. One, in better shape. Two, a higher level of discipline and dedication on the defensive end. Who can do that?
It has to be Jay Kidd.
Yeah, his head coach is the only...
A guy that Luka kind of advocated for to get the job.
But Jay Kidd has been saying that. He said it in press conferences before that Luka has to be better. I'm sure they've had conversations watching film. Luka, come here, let me talk to you about this is where we need you to be better. But yet we're still in the finals at this point talking about the same thing. And I'm going somewhere with this.
Okay.
And I'm going somewhere with...
I can keep throwing out names.
Throw out a couple more.
Mark Cuban.
Okay.
The most important man in the organization, even though he's not the majority governor anymore.
Right.
Dirk, maybe you're the franchise's all-time greatest player.
Nico Harris? Harrison?
General manager, of course. Steve Nash, former player. Who else is close to Luka that we know within the NBA, a veteran, an all-time great?
Here's something, though. You know, they always say you don't know until you know, or you don't know what you know. Maybe that person's going to be him after this point. He got to this point. He mentioned, it's my first NBA Finals. So now maybe it's like...
Kyrie Irving?
Oh, well, yeah, but sometimes when you're that good, you got to be a self-motivator, and you got to be like, oh, now I know what I got to do to get... It's one thing. I was always somebody who didn't do great in school when I was being told something. I had to get out and touch things and do it for myself and learn. So maybe that's where Luke is at. Maybe like, okay, now he's gone through this process. Now he sees what he needs to do in ways he has to be better, both... in his body, his way of play, the way he reacts to fouls, and maybe he'll mature from this and then move on and become the player everybody expects him to be.
That's the point I was getting at. No matter who's around, if the player themselves don't internalize what they have to do and be honest with themselves when they're watching film, because you see it on film, okay, in the session when you get blown by and you give something up and now the team is rotating. So a lot of times Luka get mad at his teammates for something that happened with him.
Right.
It's just like the jump shot that he shot. I forget who was guarding him. Three, he pulled back and he fell on the ground and he was yelling at the officials.
Horford has been playing great tee on him. Yeah.
And then it was Derek White, I think, in transition, got the three up top. Okay? But he was yelling and blaming the official for not getting the foul. It has to get to a point, and players go through, especially the great ones, where you got to internalize that and say it's a me problem. I have to do – that's the only person to me that changes the narrative for Luka. When he says to himself, I have to not only get better, but I'm going to dedicate myself. The thing that Joker did during the bubble, remember the time off when he went and dedicated himself and lost weight, okay? Not only did he lose weight and got in better shape, which allowed him to play – deeper into the fourth quarter and be fresher and not wear down, he maintained that discipline and it stayed off. Yep. And as a result, MVPs later, they won a championship. Yep. He's a lot – now, is he the most fluid player? No. But he's effective long-term in late-game situations because he doesn't wear down because he's in better shape. Luka has to look at that blueprint and say, I'm only going to be better as a player – the better shape I'm in. Embiid falls into that category too.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay? it prevents injuries, or it allows you to recover from injuries a lot sooner. But now your game is a lot more efficient and later in the season when you really need to be at your best. Again, you need help from your teammates and everything. Don't get me wrong. But that's the next level for me with Luka, is the internalization that I'm still young and I'm still maturing. And we got to understand that, because we put a lot on his plate at an early age because of his greatness and where he could become, who he could become. But he's only 25, and he still has to learn. So even what if they win tonight and they push it to a game five or a game six, ultimately Boston is going to win this. But what does Luka take out of this championship run over the summer? That's the key to me with him. Because there's a lot of basketball and a lot of greatness left in that young man.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But until he kind of brings that in, the Mavericks are going to be in a situation where they're always going to have to cover up for his mistakes or lack of effort, especially on the defensive end of the court.
Now, you know, I don't necessarily have inside information, but I do have a friend and someone he knows, and this wasn't like a case of I know something, blah, blah, blah. I know a guy who's very close with someone in the front office of the Mavs. And 3 years ago, and I think I told you this, Chris, he told me that, yeah, within the team, there had been meetings with Luka. They've been talking to him, telling him about the way he's reacting to the foul calls and just like his body language and demeanor. So I know, based upon what I've heard, that this is something that they have addressed with him and have been talking to him and hoping to make him aware of.
Well, and that's a good segue too, because as we go to break, we're going to come back with Mark Spears, a really good friend of mine, writer for Uninterrupted, but also at ESPN, out in Oakland, covered the Golden State Warriors for a number of years. Big time writer, understands basketball. Mm-hmm. We'll be able to dig into his insight a little bit more, not only about the Mavs, but about the NBA, the finals, and where it's going. So look forward to that conversation coming up from my guy, Mark Spears. Congrats on everything too, brother. Come back.
This Rich Eisen Show podcast is sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I don't know if they still have a shot to make the playoffs or not. Do they? Do they still have a shot?
Well, yeah. I mean, all they have to do is just try and win one of the next two without Tony. And then he comes back. And no one's running away with this league. No one's running away with this division right now.
You know what? I guarantee we'll win one of the next two without Tony.
Okay.
And I'm guaranteeing we'll make the playoffs.
Okay. I will write that. Write that down right now. Shaquille O'Neal.
If we don't make the playoffs, I'll come with a Dallas Cowgirl suit on your show with some pom-poms for 10 seconds.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
I will come. I'll walk out for 10 seconds. Let everybody take pictures, make fun, then I got to leave. 10 seconds, that's all you get. Not 11 seconds, not 12, you get 10 seconds.
Okay.
I have on the skirt,
this is amazing.
Pom-pom, and a blonde ponytail wig.
So that's if, again, the Dallas Cowboys, they don't make the playoffs at all in this season. Okay.
Now, what are you going to do if they make the playoffs?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So, Same bet. But I think they're making the playoffs.
All right, deal.
I'll do it with you, Shaq. How about that?
Deal.
How are you, Shaq?
First of all, it's not my fault. You need to blame it on the Dallas shops. I've been downtown Dallas looking for some big booty cheerleader shorts. They don't have any.
So.
But yes, I'm a man of my word. And yes, I will come there one day when you least expect it.
Ooh.
And fulfill my bet.
Well, but the thing is, I have to do it with you, Shaq. So I do need probably a little bit of a heads up, you know.
No, but you know what? I don't want you to do it with me because, you know what? You waited long enough.
Okay.
You know, you're at the point to where you don't think I'm a believer. So just to prove it to you, I want you to be front and center.
Okay.
And I'm going to give you 12 seconds.
This is the best possible scenario, Shaq, is you've extended it 2 seconds and absolved me from having to do it.
Exactly. I just want you to sit there and watch.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. If you want to give us a call us 844-204-RICH. And it's my pleasure to introduce a good friend of mine, a Naismith Hall of Fame inductee, big-time writer, used to hoop and ball a little bit. He's a writer now with ESPN and Anscape, so we had to correct that. Thank you, Mark, for giving us that. My man, thank you for coming on. Hall of Fame, how does that feel? Congratulations. When you got that call, what was it like?
Oh, man. Like, you know what? When I got the call, I believed it. But it was like, it wasn't, but I needed them to say it in front of people. You know what I'm saying? So, All-Star last year, Salt Lake City, they like, I knew it, but they had to announce it, right? They announced me and Holly Rowe at a press conference. And I'm like, okay, this is real now. You know, it's one thing to tell me on the phone. It's another thing to tell the world. And if you watch that video, I got, you know, tried to have a little man juice, as my boy said. Man juice, you know, but to have grown up dreaming to be an NBA player like you were, not having that happen, and to somehow still make the Hall of Fame as a writer, and man, it's beautiful, man, and that's you know, I don't know that there's anything bigger I could do in my career than doing that.
But you know, but here's the thing though, you mentioned the basketball part because you played it, and we all had the aspiration dreams of, you know, playing at the highest level, and some get there and some unfortunately don't, but you learn so many things during the progress. How did you transition from the basketball court, shooting jump shots, pounding the pavement, to the writing side of it? What drove you in that direction?
Jimmy, I saw a stat when I was in the seventh grade that less than 2% of all college basketball players make it to the NBA. And I was just a realistic kid. And so I actually went to a career day, and there was a guy from the Warriors there. He must have been dating one of my teachers. I don't know why this dude from the Warriors. But he asked me, like, what do you want to do when you grow up? I said, shoot, I want to play for y'all. And he's like, yeah, okay. Well, if you can't, what do you want to do? I said, I don't know. And he said, well, if you can combine, and I say this to all kids, what you love most in life with what you do best in school, you can find a job you're happy with every day. And I was like, I could write. I love sports. I can't play in the NBA Finals. Why not be there somehow? And I was like, why not be a sports writer? So I actually decided in the seventh grade that I wanted to be a sports writer.
And that's awesome. Now, does that give you – now, we talk about the thrill of the crowd and the excitement in the arena, kind of getting the goosebumps and, you know, being able to perform. Writing and kind of putting your thoughts on paper, pen to pad – does that kind of provide and give you that same kind of excitement, enthusiasm, nervousness before you're about to, you know, write a big article?
No. You know what, Jimmy, like, you played in the NBA. I played in college. There's a high that you get from playing, and I just played on a college level that I can't recreate. And I think you know what I'm talking about. There's this – that's the goosebump. That's the high, being on the court, competing – Like I can't recreate that now. It's a, certainly a blessing to write about basketball for a living and being at these games. And, you know, when I'm covering games and I know I got to write, like I know I have to write after the game tonight, you're kind of in like a mental thrive mode. Like the game gets you hyped and excited, and you have that energy that lasts hours after the game. And that it's that energy that actually helps me stay awake because these games are so late, and especially in the East Coast, and finish writing at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. So hopefully shortly after people wake up, they could read what I have to say on the game. And so that's but there's no high. If I could go back in time to play in one of my old games, I would pay a lot of money to do that. I don't think I really appreciated it as much as I should have. And if I could go back in your time and play one of your NBA games for you, I'd pay a lot of money for that as well.
No, but you know what, Mark? I think a lot of us really appreciate the road that you traveled. Remember, we were back in the day before you got with ESPN when I was covering some early Golden State 2016, maybe 17, championship runs, and we were talking about the future and where we would be. And speaking of which, you're in Boston right now, getting ready for game four. And when we were off here talking, I wanted to get into kind of the series itself, how you see it, what do you envision happening tonight. But first, kind of what's been the atmosphere? Well, you're in Dallas right now. I'm sorry, not in Boston, but you're in Dallas. After game three now, that was a game that the Mavs and the fans thought that they could get. What's the atmosphere like coming out of the pressures yesterday, going into game four tonight?
Well, I had breakfast with – have you met Cynthia Marshall?
No, they're with the Mavericks.
Mavericks.
Yeah, no.
You need to meet her. And when you come out here, let me know because I want you to meet her. And she's like, we're going to make history. She told me that after breakfast. She's like, ain't nobody ever done it in the history of the league. We're going to make history. And then at the end of breakfast, she goes, well, I at least think you're going to be in Boston. You're going to have to go back to Boston at least. I'm like, all right, so you're tempering it a little bit. They said at Mo Better Blues, this is the roughest of the roughest, man, for the Dallas Mavericks. It's something that nobody's ever done, having to try to win four in a row. And I think for them, they honestly got to take it one game at a time and see what happens. And then, you know, Jimmy, you know how this goes. Within the first 5 minutes of the game, you're going to see how much pride the Mavericks have. You're going to, and there's a quick flight on American to Cancun from here. Right? Like they could be there tomorrow afternoon. And right?
Mark, the other 28 teams, they already been to Cancun. They got to go somewhere else. They can't go to Cancun if they lose this one.
Cabo.
But coming off of that, you talk about the first 5 minutes, but in game two and game three, the Mavs started off well. Can they sustain it though?
No. This is okay. What I mean.
All right.
They weren't down like this before. I'm actually saying, do they care at this point?
Oh, I got you.
So in the first 5 minutes, you're going to see how much they care. And that's what I mean about the vacation. Are they, you're like, look, I'm home now. Do I really want to fly to Boston and continue this? Like, we'll see how much pride the Mavericks have as a franchise. I expect Luka to fight, but he's like taking shots to play in these games, right? So that's tough. I expect Kyrie to fight. I expect Dallas to have the right pride, especially because they are at home, you know, to try to fight through this. But look, man, I've gained a lot of respect for Joe Mazzulla and just his mental aspect. And I really believe he's going to have these guys ready to play. The fact that these Celtics have been there before, Jrue Holiday has been there before, closeout games are definitely the hardest games, and they're trying to do it on the road. But Jimmy, Dallas is just not as good. And if Boston is focused and they're playing the right way, I really could see this ending tonight.
Hey, Mark.
Regardless of what kind of effort Dallas puts out.
Hey, Mark, Chris Brockman. I'm a Celtics fan, but I remember your time with the Globe.
And you
you were the first person to ask Paul Pierce a question after they closed it out in 08. Can you just compare this team to the 08 team? What are the similarities? What are the big differences?
Man, them 08 dudes was crazy, man. These guys are choir boys compared to the 08 team. KG was just the most intense, ferocious competitor I've ever seen in person. It was such a pleasure to watch him every game. You know, Paul Pierce was extremely competitive. Ray Allen was just like super cool, perhaps the most beautiful jump shot. You know, what Ken Griffey was to a bat swing, Ray Allen was to a jump shot. And so that team, you know, to me, the difference is they're an older team. They're a vet team. Those guys hadn't been in the finals for the most part. Obviously, Cassell had. But they, you know, knew that those were their last days, right? Like, this is probably their best chance. They weren't in their mid-20s like these Celtics two stars. But because those two Celtics stars have gone 2 years ago and they have failed, I do think that there's a sense of urgency. As somebody that, you know, you were saying you're from Boston or a Celtics fan, like, you know this and they know this. Like, until you win a championship in Boston, I don't care what your numbers are, you're just not going to be respected the same. You have to be in the fabric of Celtics lore to get in, you know, to that company where you're mentioned alongside Russell and Bird. Yep. And JoJo and, you know, KG and Paul. Like, I think that if Boston wins tonight, two of the main people I'm watching is Tatum and Brown to see if there's just an explosion of emotion. I don't think there's two NBA players in the league that have more pressure on them to win for their franchise than those two.
I agree.
As you know, like, Boston and LA, it's a different type of pressure, but LeBron has won one for the Lakers. AD won one for the Lakers. But for these two guys, like, if they just break down and feel a release, I get it. Like, another guy to keep an eye on is Al Horford.
Yep.
Yeah.
The only player that has played in more playoff games than him and not won is Karl Malone in NBA history. And he's about 9 games shy. So, you know, I'll be keeping an eye on Al Horford as well, because he's now 38 years old, hitting 40. And at his time of his career, like, I think you start thinking, like, this is never going to happen. But because of what I just mentioned, I do expect the Celtics to be focused, to be ready. You know, they play how they play, but I don't think there's going to be this, you know, we're going to get to go back home no matter what. And we could just finish it off there. No, I really think they're going to have the right mental capacity to try to end things and then, you know, do their duck boat tour in a couple days.
It's also so funny, the 08 team, they played multiple game sevens throughout that playoff run, whereas, you know, this team has only lost the 2 games.
No, like, I think if they win tonight, they'll be 80 and 20.
80 and 20, right.
Yeah, I mean, that's incredible. That 08 team, man, like, I remember it, and Jimmy's going to laugh about this. There's going to be a documentary that comes out at some point. Like, why did it take them 7 games to beat the Atlanta Hawks? Why did they lose all the games in Atlanta?
You got a story? Oh, something about the chicken wings is really good, I heard, in Atlanta. Man. That's what I heard. Yeah.
That's a specific place. Something about maybe going to the ballet. Something about going to the ballet at night, maybe. That might be part of it, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, Mark, TJ here. Pleasure talking with you. Always been a fan of your takes and the way you look at the game. I don't want to get ahead of myself. I know the Celtics are up 3-0, and, you know, barring something that's never happened before, they're going to win that Larry O'B. So my question to you is, you know, a sports talk question. How do you think history is going to remember this Celtics team, assuming that they do go ahead and raise banner number 18?
I think you got to ask that question in 5 years. Right. Going back to that 2018, there's nothing that made me not think that they were going to, like, not even repeat, but three-peat. I thought they were super special and if you look at them the next season, and this might bring some pain to my man there that's a Celtics fan, they were actually better the next season.
Yep.
And then Kevin Garnett blew out his knee.
Mm-hmm.
never the same. The Celtics were never the same after that.
True.
And then Perk got hurt in game six in 2010.
Yeah. So, I mean, if Garnett never gets hurt, like, they are one of the scariest teams in NBA history. And so it's hard to answer that question not knowing what the future will hold. Different thing about this team is just so much younger. Like, your two stars aren't even in their late 20s yet. Like, so they have the ability to maybe do something special going forward. But what the NBA is telling you now is, like, there hasn't been any repeat champions for a while. Nothing is guaranteed. Yeah, I bet you 2 months ago there was nobody that would think that the Nuggets wouldn't not only win it, but probably even be in the finals, right? Yeah, like, true. You thought that was a given. You thought that was a given, probably, that Milwaukee would be back the next year and that they would win it, or Golden State would be back. It's just that the parity within this league right now is sensational. There's so many good teams, and to win a championship, you got to not only be great, you got to be lucky, and you got to be healthy. And other than Porzingis, the Celtics have had that, and that just shows you that it's a paramount amount of scoring and talent that they have on this roster. And, you know, you keep this team together, you fix a couple little pieces. Drew Holiday's going to be there too, and he's been sensational defensively. Porzingis back. No, I mean, I'm certainly think they'd be the favorites next year, but, you know, there's some other great teams in the entire NBA that, if healthy, can battle with them.
Mark, speaking of which, in regards to legacy, we were having this internal conversation inside about Jaylen Brown. Mm-hmm. If Celtics win, if Jaylen Brown is then presented with the Finals MVP, where does this move him in the needle in regards to players in the league? Because he made third team all NBA last year, didn't make anything this year. Where does this now push Jaylen Brown if these things were to happen, you know, either tonight or during, you know, the championship run?
Well, the one play that sticks out to me already is the steal of Luka in the dunk. Like, that to me was a reminder to everybody who wasn't paying attention to who he is. He is certainly often overshadowed because of Jason Tatum. I actually think for both he and Jason and Jaylen that if they win this, then the world is going to be thinking about them in a different light for the rest of their lives. They're going to be Celtics icons. They're going to be looked at as the elite superstars in the league. They will get over the hump in terms of respect. You can't talk that, but they didn't do it. They always, you know, fall shy anymore. They'll have done it. And then the thing is, both of them, Jaylen's on the Olympics too, right? You know, being on the Olympic team will certainly take things to another level. So I'm just I'm really excited for Jaylen. You know, I was around him when he was at Cal. He's one of the most unique and smart guys in the league. Jimmy, you'll laugh at this. He invited me to do his interview with him at a Brazilian restaurant in Berkeley while he was wearing a soccer shirt. I think he had a Real Madrid shirt on or something like that. And he was telling me about how he was learning Spanish and how to play the guitar. And so, like, there right was a on worry cue at this time where they're like, he's too smart for the league, he has too many other interests. You know, he went to Cal Berkeley for academic reasons, not for basketball reasons. It's a brilliant guy, but, you know, I think he shows you, like, you can't judge a book by its cover. He certainly comes to play every game. He's an underrated superstar in this league, and I'm with you, man. Like, this vaults him to one of the elite players in the league, especially. I think if he has a great game tonight, that more than likely he'll end up, if the Celtics win, being MVP of the finals.
And, you know, and the last question and maybe thought, we in today's society want everything to happen now. You get the team together, you win the following year. That hasn't been the case with the Celtics. With regards to winning a championship, they've been down the road of getting to a championship, Eastern Conference Finals, but haven't been able to cross over. How much of that did you see the level of maturity in this Boston team? Because when Dallas went on that run, you know, in the third quarter, fourth quarter, maybe a year ago, this Celtics team wouldn't be able to recover, and they give that up. The level of maturity that you've seen with this Boston team over the years has gotten them to this point. Where do you see this team at right now from that perspective, the growth side of it?
Well, I think the first part of the growth came from being in the finals against the Warriors but losing. I just remember seeing the pain in Jason Tatum's face, talking to family in the hall outside of the locker room after the game. But then the next year to lose to the Miami Heat in the game seven was humbling, extremely humbling. And I think it showed them that nothing is guaranteed. You know, it's not a given that you're going to be here every year. It's not a given that you'll be in the finals. And so I do think that that's given them a different perspective, a different sense of urgency. And then now you got a OG and Al Horford, who's probably like, guys, this is probably maybe my last chance. Then you got another guy in Jrue Holiday who is basically, you know, a kind of a mental big brother there that explains to them like, hey, you know, I've been a couple years removed from moving to winning the championship too. So let's take this series. So there's been a mental focus with them, with the Celtics, that I saw that I'm seeing now that I didn't see last year, that I didn't see the year before. You could make an argument that that Celtics team may have been more talented than the Warriors, but mentally the Warriors were just more experienced and in a better place than them and knew how to shut things down. And we'll see how truly sharp the Celtics are mentally tonight, because there's no question they are the better team. There's no question that the Mavs will likely fight them back, but they should end this tonight, and they should, you know, get off the plane with some red R-back, you know, Jimmy Jackson cigars and a hat, you know, getting ready for their duck boat ride. I mean, they are the better team, and it's time to, like, basically shut us all up about who they are. You know, this is their time.
Nah. Mark, really appreciate the time. I know that the crowd is going to be crazy tonight in Dallas. Enjoy my third city.
There's a lot of Boston people here, man, and there's more coming. Like, keep an eye on the crowd tonight.
Okay.
Because when you're down 3-0, you might have faith, but let's see how faithful the MFL or whatever they call it over here, the MFFL is. I don't want to see no death. I'm going to sell my seat to somebody, and I guarantee you tonight you're going to see a lot of green in the stands.
Right. All right, my man. Well, enjoy it. It's been a pleasure. Congrats on all the successes, man. Look forward to see what you got to say after game four.
All right. I'll see you at Summer League, right?
You got it.
All right.
Thanks,
Mark.
Thanks, everybody.
Good talking to you, brother.
I mean, but he talked about a number of key things there about the Celtics team, the maturity aspect of it, kind of where Jaylen Brown goes from there. But watching, I think, was really important. The pain he saw in Jason Tatum's face when they lost to Golden State, and then the disappointment when they lost as the favorites to the Miami Heat. The scars, the part that really make you appreciate where you're at right now, but they had to go through that pain, right?
You have to. And this is Luka's pain right now. Kyrie's been to the mountaintop before, but this is also his pain. He struggled in game one and two, played great game three, wasn't enough. You talk about it. The Celtics team has been there, man. This is their sixth conference finals, second NBA finals. They've come up short. It's time.
That's time. It's also time to take a little break, so come back on the other side with us and join us. But Jim Jackson here filling in for Rich Eisen right now, so a lot more to talk about. Come back over to break.
Are you struggling to close deals? Business-to-business selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and shows you hidden allies so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/direct. That is linkedin.com/direct for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/direct and get started.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
When was the first time you met Jordan? When was the first time you met him, shook his hand, covered him, or something like that?
Yeah, the first time I met him was at that Midsummer Night's Dream game out there in L.A. Mm-hmm. And we just had, there were all, you know, that was a time where guys would play in these All-Star games during the summer, and it was a real game. You know, it wasn't like they were out there like Globetrotters or something. They actually really were playing with egos involved. So that was the first time I had met him then, and we just sort of met after the game, talked and exchanged phone numbers, and so the rest, in terms of how our relationship developed, it developed from that.
Well, I mean, if there's one thing that anybody learned from this documentary is that anything that Jordan ever played in wasn't just a regular game, right? I mean, that was a real, that's one thing that... That I'm sure if anybody needed to be introduced to Jordan, and there's a whole generation that did, they just learned that. Did you learn anything from The Last Dance, Ahmad Rashad?
No, I didn't. I didn't because I think, you know, just like you said when you introduced me, I had a catbird seat to all of it. And it was one of those different sort of, I've never sort of been in a situation where I had sort of free access to the locker room, you know, to the training room, to their buses, I was just there. So I got a chance to see a lot of those things. I was glad that people got a chance to see the human side of Michael, and you see how competitive he was and how demanding he was. And I think what I take from that is, if you think Larry Bird wasn't like that, and if you think Magic Johnson wasn't like that, then you're not really thinking the right way. So it wasn't just Michael that was just a, you know, win at all costs, put your foot on the guy's neck kind of thing. All these guys were able to do that, but Michael, what separated him was his athletic ability was way above anybody's at that point.
Ready, set, griddle this grilling season. Get the Weber State rust-resistant griddle with a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for all metal tools. It's pre-seasoned and ready to cook on right now, right out the box. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. The griddle heats evenly, edge to edge. It reaches up to 500 degrees. The Weber Works Prep Cook Store system keeps cooking supplies handy. You can carry all the food, condiments, and utensils you need. Get fired up for your new Weber Slate rust-resistant griddle. That got me hungry right now, man. I want to go out and go to Whole Foods, get some stuff. That's one thing I miss about living back in Ohio in the summertime. Mm-hmm. That's all I would do.
Grill out?
Would grill out.
Yep.
You just go get some food, play a little golf early, come back.
Why can't you do that here?
It's expensive here. And I don't have a house. I got a condo, so it's not the same. You know, in the backyard, I can do whatever in my backyard, you know.
No doubt.
You know, here is a little bit different.
Yeah, I got you.
You know, so.
Nosy neighbors.
Peeking around and can hear stuff. But, you know, at the end of that, too, it was interesting. Rich was talking to Ahmad Rashad and talking about Michael. We were talking about this off air, too. With the passing recently Jerry West, and then also Bill Walton, that it got me reflecting. A few years ago, I was saying how fortunate we were from an NBA perspective, because the league is the youngest of the four major leagues, that a lot of the legends, this was maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, were still around, that you can reach out and touch. Not that some didn't pass, but the Bill Russells, the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's, the Magic's, the Oscar Robertson's, Clyde, Walt Frazier, Bob Cooley, these players were still around, that you could really see history, touch history, ask questions. But then, like someone told me before, he said, as you get older, death becomes more relevant. And then we start to see a Chet Walker, a Bill Walton, you know, now Jerry West, begin to pass right before our eyes, and how, you know, special it was to have them around. But then to reflect back now, and man, it's that transition period. We saw it in football. We've seen it in football. We've seen it in baseball. We've seen it in hockey. And it's now it's happening more frequently now, it seems, in basketball.
No, man, all these guys in the NBA, they used to be courtside. Bill Russell used to hand out the MVP trophy. He was always there. Everyone so big and larger than life. But also, I think, too, it's these guys are so much taller. It's, you know, it's a height thing being in the NBA, obviously, and they stick out and easily noticed. You see them walking down the street, it's, like, obvious who they are and what they've done and what they represent. It's the passing of time is hard. It's hard. It makes you think about your own mortality a lot. I was thinking about that a lot in the last couple of weeks, especially with Jerry, because he's been in here, and you know we've met him, we've gotten to talk with him, and have deep, interesting conversations. It's different. You know, football, you got the helmet on. It's hard to recognize these guys when they're out, and it's not like, you know, dudes can just stand on the sideline or whatever. It's easy. You know, you sit courtside, you sit front row at a baseball game or something. You can see these people, and you feel like you know them, to be honest. You know, they're part of your family in a weird way.
Well, the stories.
That's what sports are.
Yeah, the stories, the history. You see video clips. You know, last year working with the Clippers, I was able to spend some time with Jerry West at training camp in Hawaii. And I'll kind of backdrop this a little bit. Years ago, I maybe had an interest, a thought about me, you know, what's management in my future. First person I wanted to talk to was Jerry West. And I think at the time he may have been with either Memphis or Golden State. And he said, Jimmy, you know, whenever you want to talk about it, get deeper, just give me a call. Here's my number. I think you'll be great at it, but some things you need to know. Fast forward, I got a chance just to spend time with him last year in the car on the way to practice, you know, at breakfast, at lunch, and hear the story. Now, I will say this. As much as he enjoyed life, losing those 8 finals, veins popped out his neck when he talked about it. I mean, just the disappointment in not winning, being the best player at that time, or one of the best players, and not being able to win more championships. Even though he's been successful in Memphis at rebuilding that program, Golden State having an influence, of course, with the Lakers back in the day, and then the Clippers. But not being able to do it when he was at the height, the peak of his career, that says a lot about him. You know, his background, his family, how he grew up in West Virginia, the battles he had to fight internally and externally, you know, and to be in his presence was just special. And the thing about it, what I've learned from Jerry was, in today's world about analytics, we always talk about analytics, right? And it's, I think you need to have it because it's very useful tool. Okay, and I've always said this about analytics, and maybe you agree. Analytics can put two players together, and you can say, well, these numbers look like they should fit. The numbers say they play well together. But what analytics can't tell you is whether their personalities will fit. That's where Jerry came in and saw, okay, yeah, analytics says this, but it's something about this young man that I think could be special, that could work. And you need that insight, that knowledge, to be able to go beyond the numbers, to be able to look at a player or two and say, this can work or this can't work. And that's something that was special with the way the game has changed and progressed. Jerry never lost that ability to evaluate talent and kind of put talent together so you can be successful.
It's kind of like this movie, The Last Boy Scout. They talked about Bruce Willis had the line and he asked the guy, head or gut? And that's kind of, it seems, what you're saying there. Jerry listened to his gut when, you know, analytics or something might say, these are the numbers, you do this, but you got to listen to your gut. And it seemed like he did that and it worked out very well for him.
Yeah, he did. And speaking about talent, when we come back on the other side of this commercial, my there guy, Grant Hill, will join us. We got some questions for him.
Oh, yeah.
Every story eventually comes to an end. This June, hear the final episode of season 2 of the hit podcast series, In the Red Clay, Durham. In the Red Clay tells the unbelievable true story of Billy Sunday Burt, the most dangerous man in Georgia history. In the podcast that people are calling riveting, incredibly moving, captivating, and addicting. Binge seasons 1 and 2 of In the Red Clay now, wherever you listen.